together, we will cleanse the earth.
Everything they've built will fall!
Hello and welcome to episode 116 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here is my lone co-host today, Christy Pachko.
Hello, everybody.
Angie is off having adventures in Iceland, but she will be rejoining us next week. So it is just me and Christy over here for two topics. Our hot topic is going to be a mini review of Alice Through the Looking Glass, and then our main review for the episode is going to be X-Men Apocalypse. So Christy, you are the only one who sat through Alice, so you take that.
Yeah, sat through it. I did. All 113 minutes. So Alice Through the Looking Glass is the sequel to Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. This one is directed by James Bobbin, and here is its plot synopsis. Alice returns to the whimsical world of Wonderland and travels back in time to save the Mad Hatter. Imagine that, but with like a lot of scenes you don't need and a really super convoluted plot that ultimately boils down that if Alice listened to what people said in like the first 10 minutes of the movie, none of the rest of the movie would have had to happen. A lot of people are giving this movie a lot of shit. Here's the thing. I actually think it's better than the last movie, but I think the last movie was terrible. So it's, you know, damning it with faint praise there. But in this one, Alice is introduced and she is now a sea captain, which is pretty cool. And she has a whole action scene in the beginning.
That's so random. That's just not what I expected at all.
Yeah, it's like literally starts off and they're on a pirate ship. And I was like, what is happening? Like, it's not a pirate ship. I assumed pirate ships. But anyway. Then it turns out that her boat, the ownership of her boat is being threatened by her jerk ex-fiance for business reasons. And
we're talking about Alice Through the Looking Glass, right?
Yeah. This is the beginning.
This sounds so out of left field.
Yeah, it's the bookend. So, like, she literally runs away from this problem by jutting through a mirror and ending up in Wonderland. And she gets to Wonderland, and everybody is super sad, guys, because the Mad Hatter is a sad hatter. And basically, he's convinced his family didn't get killed by the Jabberwocky, and he's so depressed that not just that he doesn't know where his family is, but that no one believes him, that his weird bruise-colored makeup keeps turning gray, and, like, Alice is like, if we don't save him, he'll surely die. So she decides she has to go back in time to unkill his family.
But this, like, sounds like utter nonsense to me.
No, totally. And it's like, it's Alice in Wonderland, so you can get away with a certain level of that, but this movie is just, like, if you ever thought, gee, I wonder why the Queen of Hearts is, like, super angry at white roses, like, this answers that, because that matters. It also tells you where the, you know, off with their heads thing came from and why she's so pissed at her sister. And also, you get to learn all about the Hatter's daddy issues. It's really strange. So much of it, the problem is that even though Tim Burton is gone, and if you listen to this podcast, you probably heard me rail about Tim Burton before. I used to think, when I was growing up, I thought he was an amazing filmmaker, and I think his early films are great. His last several films are just hot garbage, and I don't know what happens. But bringing James Bobbin in, who directed the Muppet movie, he can't save it, really, because you're still stuck with all these choices, casting-wise and style-wise, and, like, I just find this so much of this movie hard to look at. But there are some things I liked quite a bit. The costumes by Colleen Atwood are by far and away the coolest thing in the movie. They're beautiful, and I never got tired of looking at those. But, I mean, if I could have muted the movie, that would have been aces. And I actually like Sacha Baron Cohen as Time. He's getting mixed reviews, but I actually feel like him playing effectively a live-action cartoon character works a lot better than, like, Johnny Depp doing his same old lisping shtick again. And, like, him and Helena Bonham Carter are both doing these accents, and I'm like, half the time I can't even tell what the fuck they're saying. And then Anne Hathaway comes in, and she's just wiggling her fingers and talking like Linda the Good Witch. And I was like, what are we doing here? So I appreciated that Sacha Baron Cohen actually made the scenes interesting, and he played a really wacky character who actually had a sense of pathos. Mia Wasikowska comes out kind of clean in this, because no matter how dumb the movie is around her, she seems active and interesting. But overall, it just feels long and not fun enough. So, yeah, in my mini review, I would basically be like, yeah, you don't need to see this. Like, I know a lot of people really love Alice in Wonderland, but, like, I don't know what this is.
Your bizarre synopsis makes me curious, and the fact that other people that I've spoken to that have seen the movie have been so incredibly negative that I'm almost thinking I need to see it, like so bad I need to see it kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, I wish it were like a winter sale or something where there's like you almost admire the grand ambition. But the thing is, it's just like I don't even know what they were doing here. Like there's just it feels like, oh, people like steampunk, throw some steampunk stuff in. Oh, what if we had little Tin Men characters? Yeah, throw that in. It just feels so haphazard and I don't get it. And I don't know. I really like Colleen Atwood's costumes, but that's literally my favorite part of this movie.
All right, well, I guess that's that. that's our mini review of Alice Through the Looking Glass. And now on to the big one. It's X-Men Apocalypse. So I am going to introduce that one. Here is the IMDb synopsis. With the emergence of the world's first mutant, Apocalypse, the X-Men must unite to defeat his extinction-level plan. That's a stupid synopsis. Yeah, so, I mean, that's basically what the movie is, I guess, though. I liked half of this movie. The first half of the movie is the movie that I wanted, with introductions, fun introductions, or for the most part at least, fun introductions to new characters, and almost getting the band together or back together in some sense kind of vibe. And then it just devolves into CGI nonsense with characters who aren't utilizing their powers in interesting ways, and like dust flying up and areas. It, you know how we always complain about superhero movies that destroy cities and never recognize the fact that they're killing tons of people? This is one of the worst sinners in that respect. And oddly enough, the people in the third act of the movie just vanish. And I understand there someone might be able to make a case for why people are not in a specific area at the end, but that's total crap. It's really weird that there's no one there besides the X-Men.
They also destroy Auschwitz.
That is a thing.
Yeah. It's just, it's a weird movie. But I agree with you. I like the beginning, especially there's a really cool introduction of Storm that I thought was fun, which was like a very kind of Aladdin riff where she's introduced on the streets of Egypt, using her powers to basically steal just so she can get by.
And she's, I thought, really that was interesting. Also, yeah, there's for the like whole 10 fascination minutes. With Mystique, which turns into a nice little through line in the movie where it connects both sides.
Totally. But like, and that they set that up and that's interesting. But then, like, they introduce Apocalypse, and Apocalypse is one very vague as a character where I get that he wants to destroy the world, wasn't totally getting why. I had to, like, go to my comic book reading husband, and he was like, oh, because of this, this, and this. And I'm like, okay,
because people suck. He wants to cleanse the earth.
But, like, is he an eco warrior or just a snob? Like, I was unclear on all that. And then the other thing about Apocalypse is they keep being like, oh, he has all these powers. And all these powers mean whatever's convenient for him to have in the script. So, like, oh, he can build cool makeovers for mutants, including armor. And which you, at one point, you actually see him take, like, Mystify Sand and be like, now you have pretty multicolored armor, which, fine, whatever. We're going to accept that that's a mutant power.
But he does not give Olivia Munn any extra armor. She must be naked throughout the rest of the movie. Why the fuck
is Psylocke in, like, a Capizio then? Does he also have Capizio powers?
I'm sorry. I know Psylocke and her costume are not there. They're not in the movie for us women, but I don't understand how anybody finds that bathing suit attractive. Because that's what it is.
No, it's super stupid looking.
It is a bathing suit with, like, duct tape around it.
Yeah, it's really dumb looking. And on top of that, it's just, like, the characters themselves. Like, people are so excited that Psylocke and Storm are going to be in this movie, but they get nothing to do. They're introduced, and then they basically just pose around Apocalypse for most of the movie. They always look like posing for an album cover. They're just staring off into the distance in different directions while he's like, let me talk more about power and things.
I think that Storm gets away with it, though, because of that opening sequence and the fact that she does have a little mini arc throughout the movie. Psylocke, on the other hand, is an absolute garbage character. She serves no purpose whatsoever, but to do what you just said, pose. Like, you see the shot in the trailer, and I swear to God, this shot must last for a full 5 minutes in the movie, where Apocalypse is, like, standing, and he's flanked by all of his horsemen on some mountain, and they're just sitting there posing, like, look at us, we're badass. And that, they just come back to that shot, like, 3 or 4 times.
I was also really unclear on if the people he chooses to be his, like, minions or the horsemen or whatever, are they brainwashed or not? Because it seems like some of them are, but then
I don't think they're brainwashed. I just got the impression that they were, once they were in too deep, they were just intimidated. They were in a situation where they couldn't get out. because he wouldn't let them.
Well, but there's like scenes with like Storm and with Angel. There's like scenes where it seems like he's taking them over specifically. But then like with Mike, with Fassbender's character, with Magneto, they just have like a really long conversation. And then he's like, how about you destroy Auschwitz? And like, what? What now? I don't know. And I was also really annoyed, and I it's a spoiler thing, so I'm not going to get super into it, but they set something up. They set up a moment for Magneto so that he goes bad again. And it's like, it's the same goddamn beat that we've repeated with him every time they need him to go bad.
Perhaps it's just like it is, but I thought that that was one of the strongest scenes in the entire movie.
Oh, that drove me crazy. It's such a trope.
Just the blocking and the way that, the way that scene progressed, even though I knew what it was trying to accomplish, when the big thing happens in that scene, it kind of took my breath away.
I'm bummed. I wanted this movie to be more fun than it is, and it just feels weird. They bring Rose Byrne back, and like they don't really give her much to just do.
And you know what? She's responsible for this entire movie. She lets the light in, no? Isn't all of this her fault?
I totally didn't put that together. You might be right.
Well, in that case, she's the person who creates all the problems in this movie and then does nothing for the rest of it. I felt the same way about her in First Class. I did not really like that character, and I thought the movie could have done without her. And the same thing is true here.
Well, because the character is just there almost as like a no homo, so that people will stop saying that like Professor X is super gay for Magneto. It's like, it's that same thing. She's the Sharon Carter of this movie, where they bring her in solely so that he doesn't keep making moon eyes at Magneto. It's just so, I'm so tired of it. There are so many interesting characters in this franchise. I don't know how this is the movie they made.
Some of the new mutants or the new versions of mutants we've seen before, I had fun with. Like, I really enjoyed Ty Sheridan's Cyclops. They do a really kind of classic, you know, high school fish out of water, first angsty. Learning to learn about his powers kind of scenario that almost anybody can relate to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because Cyclops has always, in my opinion, been kind of a weenie in this franchise. Nah. And I like James Marsden, but it's like, who cares? He's the goody-two-shoe. Nobody wants to be around Cyclops. And, like, they didn't give him the kind of interesting depth that, like, Captain America has, where he's a goody-two-shoes, but he's interesting.
Well,
but,
he's like, not Cyclops a goody-two-shoes, really. Cyclops is, you know, he's cocky and he's got an attitude.
In this now, yeah. And I like that aspect. And the other one,
he
just seemed kind of douchey.
In the first trilogy.
I felt like he was just kind of vaguely douchey and superior to everybody. And like in this, I like it where they give him some angst. They give him some stuff to work with. And I really liked, I was going to say Sansa Stark as Jean Grey. Sophie Turner as Jean Grey.
Because you liked her?
I did. I know she doesn't get a lot to do, and she basically just kind of preens and moves around. But what I really like is how, because, you know, I was annoyed when Days of Future Past was like, hey, remember all the other movies that you need to understand this movie? Now forget them. They're not canon. Mm. This at least takes that in an interesting direction where they rewrite Jean's story in a way that I think is more fitting to modern audiences and less traumatic and sexist. So I like that about it.
I guess. I was a little underwhelmed by Jean Grey in this. Maybe because characters like Cyclops and particularly Nightcrawler were just so much freaking fun to watch. And then you'd cut back to Jean Grey and she's just scowling again.
No, but that's
Nightcrawler, Nightcrawler, hands down, my favorite part of this movie. I thought Cody Smith McPhee absolutely nailed the role. The humor there is so on point. I could have watched 2 hours of him just bopping around, spitting out his one-liners. Best character.
I agree with you, and yet he's maybe in 10 minutes of the movie. He's maybe in 10 minutes. I just feel like we need to prepare people.
It's not a big role. He's in more of it than that. He has a pretty strong presence throughout. I mean, the movie is evenly split between good guys and bad guys, so obviously
he's the comic relief,
but he's not even,
I wouldn't even say he's like a secondary character. He's a tertiary character that they throw into scenes when they need his powers or they need someone to make a quack.
I feel like
he doesn't get a lot of screen time.
I saw the movie 2 weeks ago and was not counting his minutes on screen, but I definitely wouldn't call him a tertiary character. He's definitely secondary.
No, I agree he's great, but I'm saying, yeah, Exactly. Like, I'm saying he's a really interesting character, but again, he's an interesting character that doesn't get as much time as we'd like. And speaking of that, they bring Quicksilver back, which seems like a really cool idea, but then...
It is a cool idea for a little bit. And well, then here's all of a sudden thing, though, it turns into a really literally dumb just, idea.
They retread the story exactly. Like... And then they, like, introduce the whole, like, I mean, they play it in the trailer, so I feel like I'm okay to say it, where he's like, yeah, also Magneto's my dad. And I was just like, look, we teased that last time, and, like, it still doesn't go anywhere in this one, so what the hell are we doing? Like, it's so frustrating. And then I do like the Quicksilver scene, but it's the same scene as last time. Like, they're doing nothing new, and they even make a joke about it where they're talking about, like, well, 10 years has passed, which, first off, no one looks 10 years older. They don't even attempt to make anybody look 10 years older. And then they like cut their, like, a lot of things have changed. And Quicksilver's like, well, I still live in my mom's basement. And I'm like, that's not funny. That's super depressing. And also just lazy for the screenwriter's perspective. Like, he helped save, like, a lot of things and do all this incredible stuff. And then he what? Was just like, I guess I'll just go back to playing ping pong. Or, like, not, well, what do you call them? Arcade games.
He gets a pass from me because... When the movie starts to drag, I needed his comedic relief again. I really enjoyed the scene where he shows how he uses his power.
I like Evan Peters in this. I just think he's poorly used.
When they introduce, or not introduce, but they tried to go deeper into the whole father element. Oh my God, that serves no purpose whatsoever. It's the dumbest thing. Nothing. Something is said in the end of the movie that made me go, really? Really? I'm pretty sure... You might know what I'm talking about, Christy, but just wait for it. It has to do with that part of the story, and something is said at the very end of the movie, and it's stupid, and you will know it.
I also want to point out to people, because a couple of people have asked me, because they've been teasing Jubilee in some of the promotional footage. She barely has lines in this, guys. It's like, she's, literally, she goes on like a mall run.
Forget the line issue. She's barely in the movie at all. There's a story circulating now where, I forget which outlet, but someone asked Bryan Singer maybe about it, or Simon Kinberg, one of the people in charge, and they explained that a lot of the mall stuff was cut, and, you know, she had more stuff in the movie. We don't even see them get to the mall. I think some people are joking that, you know how we had the Rogue cut of Days of Future Past? They're, like, laughing, like, we could have a Jubilee cut of this. I don't think it's a serious thing at all. Don't take that as fact, but...
I don't know how you would put Jubilee in the movie more, necessarily, because, I mean, I remember from the cartoon show, Jubilee's powers were always kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, they teased her, and people were stoked about it, and I feel like it's kind of shitty.
That's also... I don't know necessarily if it's that they... I don't want to blame it on them. It's almost
she
like
she was in like one of the first images, because they released an image of Jubilee and Jean, and everybody was losing their minds.
I guess, was it official image, or wasn't it like an Instagram from her personal account? So that's kind of the culture that we've created, where it's superhero movie image from anything, take it, obsess over it.
But also in superhero movies, there's a large outcry right now for a greater representation, and specifically greater representation of Asian people. This could have been an opportunity to actually have that, and instead it's just like, you can tell it's Jubilee because she has a yellow coat on, and there's really like nothing else to it.
There was really no reason that Jubilee couldn't have joined the other Young Mutants as they went up about their business and did their stuff.
Yeah, it's just that she's never been important to the franchise. And this movie feels like it was retro-engineered to me, where they were like, okay, so we know people like Jennifer Lawrence, but we know we can't put Jennifer Lawrence in all that makeup anymore because she's allergic to it. So how do we keep her out of the makeup? Like, no, really, because she's not in the makeup for huge swaths of this movie.
Jennifer and then it's Lawrence in this movie drove me off my mind.
She doesn't want to be there anymore.
Every time she was on screen, I was taken out of the movie because... she just doesn't give the role anything. It's like, you look at someone else, like even, okay, there's some flaws with Fassbender, I think, in this, particularly towards the third act, where he kind of just stands there and does nothing. It feels lazy, like, oh, he didn't feel like, I'm hesitant to say something like this, because obviously I can't put words in someone's mouth or pretend I know how they felt in the moment, but it felt like a really lazy use of Magneto, where it's just like, let's have him stand there so he doesn't have to work that hard. Again, I don't know if that's really the discussion that happened, but that's the impression I got.
It's a lot of standing with his arms outstretched. It's just, they don't give them anything to do, and like I said, they're retreading a lot of like similar themes and similar stories in this movie, so I don't really blame the actors for... appearing really bored. I blame Bryan Singer. He started this franchise.
But the difference between Fassbender and Jennifer Lawrence, I think, is to me, Jennifer Lawrence appears bored. Fassbender and McAvoy, you know, maybe
McAvoy
they don't
never
have
looks
to,
bored to me.
No.
I don't think he's ever had a boring day ever.
I think the two of them look a little more involved than she did. It's like, I look at her eyes and I've seen almost every single movie she's been in. Every single time she's in a movie, whether it's really great or not so great, I feel like she's always giving 110%. There's always a real true character there. Something almost seemed kind of dead on her face here. Like she was just reading lines from a script.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also supposed to be, I don't know, Mystique is ambivalent about her becoming like a activist hero to, like a folk hero to the mutants. And it's a weird choice because, like, how do you play ambivalence? Like, it just seems honestly like really bad writing and bad concept, and it just fouls up this whole thing. And it's like, I don't want to say I'm done with this franchise because I've had a lot of fun with this franchise, but since they've rebooted, I have not had as much fun as I have since. Like, my favorite movie is still X2, and I'm disappointed that we have the same director as X2. And it's just like, what the fuck is this? Like, the stakes don't feel real. The characters just feel like they're running through the same fucking hamster wheel. I mean, I feel like if you've seen the other X-Men movies, you've seen this one.
I guess. I don't want to give the impression that I absolutely hated this movie, because I definitely didn't. In fact, I really enjoyed the first half of the movie. If the movie had continued like it did, I would have loved the whole thing. But instead, it's, you know, it's crap in the end, really. Yeah. I mean,
it chucks character in lieu of lots of speeches about power.
It's completely hollow and pointless, and there's no reason we need stuff like that. But I had enough fun with it that in the end, when it wraps up, I caught myself thinking, I wouldn't mind seeing more of him, and her, whatever the assortment of characters was that I did enjoy spending the time with. But, you know, the last third act of the movie really ruins a good deal of the fun I had at the beginning.
Yeah, it's a drag.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited for Wolverine 3, though, because Jackman never looks bored. And even Origins was terrible. Like, he came back with the Wolverine. I really like Hugh Jackman in that role.
This isn't a spoiler, so very vaguely, how did you feel about Wolverine's involvement in this movie?
Oh, it's dumb, but at least he's there.
Isn't it? Yeah, I thought it was really dumb, and I'm curious.
It feels like an afterthought.
I'm curious to know if people who might not have watched the previous films recently will even understand what his stuff means. You know,
sure.
I don't want to spoil anything, but I don't think a lot of people are going to process what that is actually about unless they've seen other movies recently or just very familiar with the source material.
Do you think people will go to this movie having not seen the other ones? I mean, maybe not all of them, but
I do think a lot of people who maybe have only seen all the X-Men movies once are going to be, you know, this is just another X-Men movie. I should see it. And maybe Wolverine fighting is cool, but his current situation might not trigger what it should.
I think it's
one. You know what I mean?
I think
it's weird. It's weird talking about it while being around.
The setup is so part of his character. But the setup of that scene, without getting too into whatever, it's such a part of the character within this franchise. I think, one, people know it, or two, if you don't know it, it doesn't fucking matter for the context of this movie anyway.
No, it doesn't.
It seems like he was like, I have 4 days, what can you do? Because, that's the other thing. So much of the action in this movie takes place off screen. Like, Wolverine's big battle is mostly off screen. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I mean, like, this movie's coming on the heels of Batman v Superman, Deadpool, and Civil War, and they have Wolverine in, like, basically a cameo where you don't even get to see him really go nuts. Boo!
I don't know. That part of it was effective enough for me. It's just that it felt like he was shoehorned in there, and he took something away from the other characters. I wanted to see the other characters there accomplish something, not him do it for them.
I get that.
All right. So we should probably wrap this up. What's the general consensus here? Would you recommend people go see this movie?
Absolutely not. It's like, there's so much better movies in the theaters right now. I can't recommend this. Like, when it's playing on HBO Now on a Sunday and you're kind of thinking you might fall asleep during it, then it's fine. Watch it then.
I'm pretty much right down the middle with this. I think if you're a fan of the franchise, you kind of need to see it. I had enough fun with the beginning of the movie to say that I would like people to see that portion of it. But then again, what I said about the end still holds true. It does ruin some of the fun I had at the beginning. So, you know, I can't offer any advice one way or the other. If you're into X-Men, I guess go see it. And if not, maybe take a pass and go see something else. So I guess that's it. That's a wrap on episode 116 of Popcorn and Prosecco. I hope you know where to find us. Go to iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, and comment. We have our website, popcornandprosecco.com. Tweet at us, at Popcorn Prosecco. Please like us on Facebook as well, and then you can find both of us all over the interwebs. Christy, you want to go first? Angie's not here.
I know. We'll shout hers out.
Before Invisible Angie?
Angie is in Iceland, but normally she tweets it at AJHAN. And she writes for slashfilm.com.
You should also probably go look at her Instagram, because she's got super creepy pictures from Iceland that I love.
Yeah, she's got penis pants. I mean, not personally.
I'm sure she's going to really appreciate this shout out now.
Yep. This is what she gets for leaving us for a week. Anyway, I write all over the interwebs. You can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko.
And you can find my writing on Collider.com, my face on Collider Video's YouTube channel, and you can also catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
#PenisPants.
Not all of us can control our powers.
Then don't.